This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon, Joy listeners. This is Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9. It is Brendan Bale and David Hunt with you.
Hello.
Back.
You're back.
It's us again. Yeah.
I didn't go anywhere.
No, you didn't go anywhere. I left you here.
You did.
But I left you with a fantastic show.
Yeah.
And from all reports, it was massive, which kind of fits the theme. But a lot of fun as well.
Yeah.
Very informative.
Well, I really enjoyed it. We had two panels of three people on each panel, half an hour each, and we were talking about Dance Massive, which is, we're right in the middle of the contemporary dance music festival that's on here in Melbourne right now, and there's amazing workshops and forums and you know, like great performances, some debut performances, and you know, it's really a wonderful event that happens in here in Melbourne, like so many other events, but this one is all about contemporary dance, and people were here from interstate and overseas for it, so they're still here, but a really good festival. So if you're into contemporary dance at all, there's so much out there, so go online, check it out. It's dancemassive.com, I think it is. Yep.
Does one sort of stand out to you, not necessarily people that you interviewed, but is there one that you really want to go see?
Well, Philip Adams, which Dance Lab, that one seems to... everything Philip does, I really enjoy. He's so interesting and so brave. There's no pulling any punches with him. He's pretty straightforward with what he does. So, yes, I do like him, but there was a couple of others that really did. Well, like at Malthouse, there is a production, and it's all people overweight, where dancers are supposed to be all slim, or not supposed to be, but they are because they work
generally
so hard. Yeah. And you know, like, and it's pulling the crowds in, and people are loving it.
And we know someone in it.
Yeah, we do.
When we had him on, what was it, 3 weeks ago? Now,
yeah, and he mentioned something about it, didn't he? Yeah.
And that is, of course, Mr. Dina Curie. I saw they did a public performance, and I think it was in City Square.
Yep.
So that's fantastic. That's sort of making it into kind of performance art, cross with dance. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And Dance Massive, I really enjoy what they do. And their production, talking about doing an outdoor one, they actually, the show is done at sunset each day, and the audience is looking at the sun's in the background for the audience. So you see, if it's a lovely sunset, you get the beautiful sunset as the performance is actually happening in front of you.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Now you spoke about Kingdom, so that is coming up later in the week. But I got to go see the one called Catalogue by Raucous. And because I haven't gone to see a lot of dance, so it's kind of new to me, trying to take it all in, especially contemporary as well. And I just was sort of blown away by it. It was something like I'd never seen. The set was kind of set up, you couldn't see anything when you sort of sat down. It was pitch black and sort of kind of looked like celebrity squares in terms of like these sort of boxes set up.
Right.
And they would show each dancer, but it was very contemporary, and the use of disabled dancers was incredible. It kind of blew me away. Just to sort of a little bit like the other show with Dean, just sort of, you know, bending what dance is supposed to be and kind of subverting what we think dance is. So I just loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And that was at the meat market in North Melbourne. So I'd never been there as well. So that was
a beautiful space, isn't it?
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. So it's fantastic. So I'm looking forward to trying to take it all in and and as I do, try and learn as I go along.
Yeah, it's really is a very interesting festival. I'm very, very proud that it's here in Melbourne.
It's definitely pushing the boundaries. Mm. Now, moving on from dance.
Yes.
Let's get into film, David.
Okay.
Why not? Now, I'll start off with my favourite film that audiences can go see this week. It is out by the name of Inherent Vice. Now, this is Joaquin Phoenix's new-ish film. It's taken a little while to get to Australia, to be honest. It was out in America a little while ago and kind of missed out on all the Oscar, buzz and all that kind of stuff. But it was a great film. I really love it. It's quite a long film. It's over it's over 2 hours.
Well, I think with him is that Hollywood are a little bit scared of him because he is quite eccentric. And that whole a performance film that he did where people weren't sure whether he'd gone crazy or whether it was actually a film. I think from that, he's viewed very differently now in Hollywood.
Yeah, I kind of see him as sort of a Sean Penn type character now.
Yeah, so but even more eccentric.
Even more eccentric than Sean. He's kind of pulled it in lately. Yeah. He's doing sort of mainstream things now. But yeah, Joaquin, I think he's a draw card though. I loved him in Her. That was sort of quite big last year and sort of the tail end of the year before. But this is Paul Thomas Anderson's newest one. And, you know, he's a quality filmmaker and takes time with it, takes time with the storytelling, doesn't rush it. As I said, it's 148 minutes, so but doesn't feel it.
Yeah. That's always a good thing.
It's a great thing because, you know, if it is that long and you're not really feeling it, it can feel like torture.
Yeah.
You know? but it is like an updated version of a noir film. Or a noir text.
Yep.
So it's set in 1970. And so it's not all shadows and darkness. It's very sort of light.
Right.
But it's still got a noir feel to it.
Yep.
So I'm giving it... I've changed my rating system, David.
Oh, have you?
Just without letting you know.
Right. Oh, that's all right.
I'm going to letters now, and this one gets an A.
Oh.
Yes.
Gosh.
Not quite an A+, but an A.
A, right, okay.
Another film, not quite as good, but I still got a lot out of it, Eastern Boys, from director Robin Campillo. It's a French film. And, I quite liked it, but the opening scene, it's kind of strange. It's very voyeuristic. It's set in a train station or sort of shopping center/train station and kind of following these characters around. And it sort of feels like you just shouldn't be watching. It's very strange and it's sort of an off-putting way to start the film, but kind of fits with the rest of it. So...
are you a voyeur at all?
Well, I try not to be.
I can't help myself. I just find some people really interesting, and if you're walking behind them, and I will often follow somebody, not all day or anything, but for 10, 15 minutes just to watch their habits. I find that really interesting thing to do. Or you might be wandering around either in the city or somewhere, and you've seen somebody and think, oh, they look like an interesting person, and they disappear. And 10, 15 minutes later, or even an hour later, you come across them again. And I find that really, or just sitting, watching people going by, I find that really fascinating.
Well, when it comes to architecture, you're definitely a voyeur, that is for sure.
Yeah.
Especially around St Kilda.
Especially around St Kilda.
Now, the last film that I'll sort of talk about today is one called Kidnapping Mr. Heineken. And
In the beer?
Well, no, but...
well, why did you think about had just pause? Well,
I think maybe there might have been a connection there.
Oh.
No, he was this sort of rich, very rich sort of banker and was kidnapped for ransom. And it actually has Anthony Hopkins as the man who is kidnapped. But
He's always so
he's
good.
Fantastic. And he really is great in this film. He's very cheeky. He's not a typical kidnapped victim. I'll just put it that way. He's very sneaky, very naughty, a little bit Hannibal Lecter-ish, you know, that kind of devious.
Okay. Well, if he's a very wealthy man, he probably wouldn't want to put up with any rubbish.
No.
And that's the whole thing. Even in when the tables are turned, that people like him think, well, bugger you. You know, like, I know what I want to do and I'm going to do it. And if you're not strong enough to push me down, I will take over the situation. Yeah. Was it sort of like that?
It is, yeah. I won't give anything away, but he certainly gives them a run for their money. Yeah, this is interesting. But the film just lacked something for me. It should have been really sort of punchy and thrilling. It should have been a thriller, essentially, but it turns into this kind of a bit weepy or wimpy drama. And, yeah, didn't get a lot out of that. So C plus for that one. And back to Eastern Boys, I'll give it a B minus. I didn't love it as much as I should have. But yeah. But that is my wrap up for today for the film. But we're going to talk about the Melbourne Queer Film Festival a little bit later in the show if we have time as well.
Right, okay. Because it's getting sooner and sooner, isn't it?
It's on the 19th. So very, very close. 4 days away. And it's a great thing. And Lisa Daniels' last festival, of course.
Absolutely. Now, we've got a very special guest coming in after this, haven't we?
We certainly do. Very exciting, actually.
Who is it?
Her name is Ali McGregor.
Right.
And I think everyone should know her name.
If by name or just something that she's been involved in over the years. We had a chat with her before we came on air, and she made me feel as if I was doing nothing, but I was sitting on my hands. You know, she's such a busy woman. So I'm looking forward to that. You're on Joy 94.9.
The perfect mix of music, news and interviews. Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan. And if you want to get in touch with us, have a bit of a chat, you can SMS 0427 Joy 949, or you can call 1300 Joy 949, or email onair@joy.org.au.
And also, don't forget our Facebook page.
Yes.
Which
check
is what?
Out, check it out. Well, it is Facebook/Sunday Arts Magazine Joy 94.9, I think.
I think.
But we are very, I can't wait any longer. We're very delighted to welcome this next lady to the show. We're going to have a great chat with her today. Ali McGregor is her name. And if you don't know, she is, she studied bachelor's
she's
music.
She's a bit of a smart ass. She's done it all.
Yeah, and we're going to try and list everything now, but we'll see how we go. Principal soprano with Opera Australia, cabaret artist, TV presenter, actor, performer, and mother. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Arts Magazine.
Coming out and reading my Wikipedia page.
So tell us, how did it all start? You've got a Bachelor of Music and you finished that in the UK, but started it here.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What got you into music?
You know, I don't know. Probably just a natural need to show off, I expect. I don't know. I remember, you know, putting on little Christmas shows and making my cousins be the lesser roles in the show and stuff. And I've always loved, you know, being on stage and at school, you know, was involved in anything I could, you know, drama and music and what have you. So, and choirs and everything like that. So I just had a love for it. And then I think leaving school, I couldn't really, it didn't immediately become apparent that I should do music because that didn't seem like a proper job. And I couldn't really work out what else I wanted to do. Took a year off and then found out, you know, I started doing opera at school and it just sort of seemed to combine everything I loved, you know.
You would have been a bit of the odd one out doing opera at school.
Kind of. I mean, you had to study, if you did AMEV music or did music for HSC or VCE or whatever, you did have to sing some opera music, some classical music. So I had been, you know, that wasn't so odd.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I loved it. As I said, I loved acting as well. So it had that combination of the two things. And music theatre wasn't a massive thing at school for some reason. I don't know why. Otherwise, it maybe have gone into that direction. But opera just seemed to have it all. And I think when I was deciding what to study, I thought if I studied at the highest degree I could, then I could kind of do what I wanted, I guess. I thought, you know, I might as well train the instrument up, you know, as best I could. And I kept thinking I would get kicked out or it wouldn't work, you know. I mean, I remember even when I was, after I'd finished studying and I was working in London and I auditioned for Opera Australia for the Young Artist Program with Simone Young over there and I really didn't think. And then I got the job and I thought, okay, can't turn down a job at the Sydney Opera House. So I thought I'll give it 3 years and, you know, if it doesn't, I ended up being there for about 6 years and it was fabulous. But I've never really had a grand plan, you know, I just sort of go, roll with the punches a bit. And,
yeah, but because opera is one of those crafts that you get and you tend to stay with it. You don't, you know, like sort of drop the ball. Why didn't you stay with it?
Oh, you do stay with it in a country that has enough work for opera singers to work full time all the time, all of us. You know, so it was a combination of something, I guess, you know, something else new and shiny coming along at Opera Australia and me not getting quite as much work. And then the famous Spiegel tent parking itself on the forecourt outside the Arts Centre here in Melbourne, and me creeping into it one night after an opera and just being having my mind blown. And then it was very fortuitous, actually. I had a necklace that broke and it fell down this grate. Two gentlemen helped me find it again, get it out, and I ended up buying them a glass of wine to thank them, chatting to them, and it ended up being David Bates, who owns the Spiegel Tent, and Ross Mullison, great producer. And I told them this story that I'd worked in a theatre in London, an old music hall, and in the 1800s, there was, as the story goes, there were a bunch of chorus girls from Covent Garden, and after their opera, they would take off their outer clothes, keep their corsets and petticoats, and catch a carriage to the east end of London and then get on stage at the vaudeville, at the music hall, and sing their arias for this sort of vaudeville-loving public.
Oh, wonderful.
And have money thrown at them, probably made more than they did as chorus girls. And I always thought this was such a wonderful idea, and I really wanted to do something with it. In the intervening years, I'd done a lot of research into sort of European burlesque as opposed to the kind of striptease American burlesque, I guess, more sort of satirizing popular culture. And I loved it. And I told them this story and they said, well, why don't you do that? So I quite literally did. I was doing Manon, and it was really beautiful costumes and gorgeous corsets and things. And I got four members of the chorus, and we crept out after the third act, so we weren't needed in the fourth act because Manon just died on her own. And and we crept over, and I had this a props pub and helped me decorate this shell. And we sort of had it like Birth of Venus, and I came out of it singing an aria, and they fanned me with palm fronds and things. And so that was in the middle of what was called Club Swizzle back then, which was, you know, a DJ playing, and you had burlesque and, I don't know, sword swallowers and tap dancers and everything, and then suddenly just broke into this little bit of opera, and they loved it. And then David encouraged me to do a whole show, and then I joined the troupe of Le Clique, and then I kind of, quite literally ran away with the circus.
And because of the Spiegel tent being used around the world, because there's only a few of them, and although there seems to be more popping up.
Oh, there's more. Well, I mean, you know, they've been around for a very long time, but the famous Spiegel tent was the first one really to kind of popularise it, you know, and it kind of came with the popularisation of cabaret as an art form again, you know, and taking it out of the sort of cheesy hotel lounges and things and back into this kind of underground genre that it is now. And so, yeah, the famous Spiegel tent did travel. So I went with it and the show Le Clique to Edinburgh. And then, since then, there's a few other tents that have come into sort of circulation. And, you know, there's one show, The Paradiso, that I've just, in the last 6 months, I've performed doing my kids show Jazzmatazz in it in London and Sydney and Auckland, and each time I've had like similar crew, and there's another show Limbo that have been in the, so it's quite, sometimes you sort of step out of it and think, what city am I in? It's like it's like some sort of magic carpet that you just fly around the world in.
Well, talk about flying around the world is exactly what you do. And you seem to, you know, like, how many years have you done the Fringe Festival at Edinburgh?
It'll be my 10th year this year.
That's a long time, isn't it? 10 years in a row?
One of those years I just kind of popped up for a couple of spots and things like that. But, 2005 was my first year.
But haven't you got two children?
I do now,
How do you manage it?
They come with me.
They go with you?
They're little carny children,
Which, how wonderful would it must be for them? You know, like they would know so many wonderful characters.
They really do. I mean, especially my youngest one's just over one, so she, not so aware of it, but my eldest is nearly five, and she loves it. She's been on tour with me. She came, you know, last year in Edinburgh, she came to every single one of my kids' shows. And sometimes she just hung out backstage or sat in a booth in the Spiegel tent and drew while I did my song. But she has a cast of favourites that she really adores. I don't know if you've heard of the Vava sisters, Adrian Truscott, who's wonderful. They did a couple of shows at 5 p.m. for some unknown reason in Edinburgh, and I took them to it, and it's called Naked as the Day They Were Born, and they're nude in the show. And so she calls them the nudie ladies. She thinks they're hilarious. She loves them. And Gâteau Chocolat, she loves. She says he's fancy. It's a new word. And, she is obsessed with watching. Oh, and the Briefs boys. I don't know if you've had the boys from the boylesque group Briefs in, but, she spent quite a bit of time in them in London. We had them all over for barbecues at our place, and, she loves it. She gets makeup tips from drag queens, and it's pretty awesome.
Fantastic. You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy.
Touch me, baby, tainted love. Touch me, baby, tainted love.
A little tainted love for you listeners out there. You are listening to Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan and David. And that was Tainted Love by the lovely Ali McGregor, and she's still with us. She's stuck around.
Oh, well, she's here all for the rest of the show.
Drag me out of here. Are you kidding me?
Now, this is sort of from your show, Ali McGregor's Alchemy, mm-hmm. or at least inspired by it. Do you actually perform that song in the show?
I do. I open the show with that. The whole show is, and this is, you should point out, from the CD at the same name, yes. available in all good record stores. I open the show with Tainted Love because the concept of the show was the marriage of my two musical loves, because when I was starting to sing, I had a fantastic teacher, a jazz musician called Paul Retke, and he encouraged me to go and listen to all the, you know, the wonderful women of song, Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, Nina Simone, Sarah Vaughan, all
there,
those.
There were so many great ones, weren't there?
So many great ones, yeah. And just really fantastic interpreters of songs. And so I did listen to that and just immersed myself in music of that era, you know, and I loved Andrew Sisters and I loved all of that kind of singing. And but at the same time, I was getting up early on a Saturday morning to watch Rage and, you know, whatever wonderful, fantastic golden 80s trash that you could throw at me. So I thought, you know, and I wondered if those songs were going to become classics one day. Like, you know, I did a show about Irving Berlin and he wrote like 1,500 songs. He was churning them out Tin Pan Alley style, just like pop songs, you know, and people really didn't think much of them at the time. They were just, you know, something frothy and light. And I wonder if, you know, some of the songs I chose on here that I think of as classics will end up being, you know, thought of as kind of great American songbook style standards.
Well, which this one has.
Oh, that one certainly has. I start the show with that purely because that was originally a Gloria Jones song that got, that was treasure that got turned into trash. And
in the nicest way possible.
Oh,
though.
Look, when I say trash, you have to understand this is an absolute compliment from me. I do say my favourite phrase in the world, which is, you know, you can't polish a turd, but you can roll it in glitter. And that actually should be the byline of the show. That's the whole point of the show.
And we see the lovely thing about this is that a lot of people thought that Mark Harmon from Soft Cell wrote it.
Yes.
But he didn't.
No, he didn't. It was Gloria Jones' song. And it was a really great soul track and then got turned gloriously, as you pointed out, into a fantastic, you know, trashy 80s song. And so I start the show with something that's sort of, you know, treasure that got turned into trash. And then I go on with some of my favourite songs from mainly the mid-80s and mid-90s. I work out during the show that that's when I was either in high school or at university. And they're the times I think maybe I just went out and saw more live music, just listened to pop music a lot more. So they're the songs.
Countdown was around, of course.
Yeah, it was indeed. I actually made an appearance on Countdown.
Oh, really?
It's embarrassing. Obviously, I don't want to name drop. But
huge.
My dad, when he was growing up in Ballarat, the family that owned the local milk bar, their daughter started going out with a bass player from Australian Crawl.
Right.
I know, it's pretty exciting. And his name was Paul Williams. And when they were Australian Crawl were on Countdown, I got to go along. Debbie Byrne was there. She said hi to me in the corridor. It's no big deal, whatever. And, so that was my Countdown. Anyway, we digress. So, pop music. And so, mid-80s. There's a lot from 1987, which is, I work this out during the show, is that I couldn't work out why so many songs from 1987 resonated with me. And then I realised it was the summer I discovered Boys.
Oh.
And so it was the soundtrack. INXS's Kick album was very big that year. And so obviously I was really young when I discovered Boys, like barely born. So
tell us your thoughts now. You were saying a lot of it is 80s, 80s, 90s music.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of a lot of the pop music today?
I still love a good pop song. You know, I do think a good song is a good song. It doesn't matter what genre. And a test of a good song, I think, is if you can cover it in many different ways. And I kind of love that this, well, it's called covering nowadays. It used to just be called singing a goddamn song, you know, when you get to interpret a song that's been written by someone else, you know.
Ella Fitzgerald
didn't write her own song. So,
But do you think that's a case of a lot of the people, especially a lot of the rappers, can't write, and so therefore they're using older songs?
Oh, Yeah, no, that's a different thing altogether, I think, with rap, because you're using loops to get a beat, and that's part of that culture. And, you know, I have no problem with that. It's just there's this idea now that people don't talk so much about that they don't write their own pop songs, and because it sort of seemed to be not quite as good as if you're writing your own songs. But, you know, I think interpreting a song is or interpretation of a song is a really great gift, and I love a good interpreter. And you know, Taylor Swift's "Shake It Off," great pop song. Everything that
awesome.
Max Martin, you know, all the Britney songs, great, great. Oops, I Did It Again later on the album.
Yeah. Two of the tracks, and you did a "Making Whoopee" medley cross with "Barbie Girl" from Aqua.
That's seminal. I need to listen 90s to Norwegian supergroup. Yeah.
But another album that you've got out, another CD that you have out, is your children's album.
Yeah.
And talking about more current songs, you've covered a Beyonce song.
Well, how can you not, really, frankly? I've mashed that one up, though, with the Andy Griffiths TV show theme song, which is not really that well known over here, but it's that little whistling
pretty
tune.
Well known. Oh, is it? Brendan probably wouldn't. He's too young. But I remember it very well.
Yeah.
And it's the sort of song that, being on the kids' album, that all those little girls were running around flashing their hands and doing some sort of dance, weren't they?
Yeah, well, I have dances in the show, and we have a sort of simplified choreography in that song for everyone to do. But, you know, I realised that song was just one of those infectious songs that they say that you can – the test of a very good pop song is if babies and, like, small children dance to it, because they have no filter and no judgmental kind of thoughts about it. It's just if it's got a good beat and a good tune, they love it. And that song, I don't know if you saw, there were hundreds of sort of YouTube videos of babies dancing to it and stuff. It's it's a good song.
All right, well, let's listen to it. You're on Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan, and that was Single Ladies.
And the Andy Griffith Show.
Medley. Yes, fantastic. What a fabulous way to spend a Sunday afternoon with
Ali,
that song.
Why did you mix those two?
Why not? I don't know.
Well, where did
You know what? That song in particular was inspired by a bootleg. I'd heard a DJ do a mashup of those two songs.
Oh, okay.
It works really, really well. And you know, I wanted to do that song for the kids show, and then I had to try and think of some way of making it kind of jazzy, and that just felt kind of jazzy, and the band got into it, and everyone loves a sort of nonchalant whistle on stage, so the kids all get into it. It's good.
Yeah.
Now, we have had a message in on 0427 Joy 949. Great to hear artists with varied skills, talking about you, Ali. Mm-hmm. Wondering how, who.
Is he talking about how I can put IKEA flat pack furniture together?
Well, God, yeah. I can't, so. But who would you love to work with? Who haven't you worked with and you would love to?
There's a whole bunch of people. I got to work with Paul Capsis ever so briefly a couple of times with Adelaide Cabaret Festival. I'd love to work with him more. I have a massive crush on IOTA. Massive crush on IOTA, and everything he does is extraordinary. I've been lucky. Most of the people I want to work with, I have worked with in a little way. I haven't worked with IOTA yet. But, there's acts like that I have a... Yeah, I'd really love to. I'm trying to think of any others.
Because that's what you do, don't you? At the Comedy Festival coming up, you do a late night show where you have the best of what you go around and check out and bring the best. You've done the same in Adelaide Cabaret Festival where you did
I hosted the Backstage. Backstage Club for a few years. I've done that. And I've also done the Variety Night in Edinburgh as well, and Adelaide Fringe Festival and other places that I can't. Oh, London.
Why do you do that best of the fit? You know, was it just no one else was doing it and they like the way you can, how well you can
slightly
host?
Slightly going back to what I was talking to you about before, about sort of researching this sort of burlesque and European burlesque. And within that, I also, you know, researched a lot about vaudeville and music hall. Mm. And I loved there was a story of sort of a theatre impresario who had a music hall night, and he would just sit in this big chair, like a throne on the side, and he had one of those, is it a gavel that the judges have?
Yep.
And he would just bang it if he didn't like the act, and they'd be taken off, and the audience
red faces
would really
in a way.
It was Ray, he was the first red signs, and then the audience would really look to him, and if he was enjoying it, they would enjoy it, and I just thought this was a really cool idea, so I started the Variety Night in 2000 and six, I think, yes, because it's the 10th year next year. And I sit on stage on, I have a chaise longue that I, you know, recline on stage during the show. And I now have a band. I used to just have a piano accordion, poor sad and lonely piano accordion player at the back, but I can afford a whole three-piece band now, which is exciting.
Although there's nothing wrong with the piano accordion.
Look, poor sad piano accordion players.
I
love them. Yeah. Stop it. But... yeah, look, it was a really good excuse for me just to see a bunch of acts. And, you know, I don't have a producer backstage who's booking them all. I book everyone myself, and I don't book anyone I haven't either seen or, you know, actually I think I've seen everyone who I book. But also I'm an awful liar. I cannot be on stage seen by the audience pretending to like someone that I really don't like. So I really make sure I book the best acts. And it's become, yeah, it's 9th year. We just got... haven't been awarded with it yet because it's the night of the Comedy Festival, but I believe I'm receiving an award from the Green Rooms this year for contribution to cabaret for the show, which is
fabulous. Lovely.
Yeah,
lovely.
You know, cabaret as a genre is something I feel really, really passionate about, and this show has been wonderful. There's been a bunch of acts that have gone on to kind of greatness that did that. Felicity Ward, who's a fabulous stand-up comedian and lives based in London, she did her very first stand-up spot at our show back in the day, and yeah, it's been wonderful to see a lot of these acts kind of to grow and become absolute winners at the Comedy Festival and beyond. So it's exciting. And we always have comedians and cabaret and also a bit of circus or burlesque as
right.
well.
Is there a particular show that you would like to pull together at this stage? You know, is there something in the back of your head thinking, this is a project that I can see that I would like to do down the track?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of those. But one that's kind of at the forefront at the moment is a show that we're actually workshopping in April very soon at Kingston Arts Centre, which we've just been given a sort of residency so that to work up an emerging show on the 50s exotic Peruvian singer Ema Sumac.
Right.
Don't know if you're aware of her. She had a 4.5-octave range, and she was from Peru and did a lot of kind of Peruvian folk music, and then she went on and became this kind of real, just that exotica explosion in the 50s in America. She was one of the biggest sellers of Capitol Records, and she did this with Les Baxter, this big sort of mumbo album, which you would have heard because when Electro Lounge came back,
yes.
you know, sort of probably 10 years ago now, but they sampled her a lot. So you'd certainly recognise bits and pieces
definitely
of the
know,
music.
Know
yeah.
Of her, yeah.
And she's quite a character. A rumour went round that her name was Amy Camus and she was really a bored Brooklyn housewife and just changed, you know, put her name inverted. That wasn't true. She absolutely was a Peruvian. And then there was stories that she was an Incan princess and... they're a little unfounded, and there's lots of kind of crazy stories about her and her husband, who was kind of a real Pygmalion type, but very strong-willed and sort of, you know, ran off. Well, didn't even run off, just had an affair with her cousin who was dancing with a group, and she got pregnant, and then they brought up the child to get, you know, it was all very 50s. And, there's some great stories. So I've actually got Fez Fanar and Dallas Delaforce, who both in briefs are going to come down and work with me, and Imogen Kelly, who's Australia's reigning Queen of Burlesque.
Yeah,
and
I know.
We've got a sort of six-piece band, and we're going to do a work-in-progress show very soon in a couple of months, and then hopefully onwards with that show. It's going to be a really big show when we do it, and I want it to be like if Ema Sumac was around now and she did a Vegas retrospective of her career. So it's going to be a bit camper than she was, if that's possible. And, it's going to be pretty awesome.
Oh, that sounds
certainly
excellent.
Not adverse to camp.
No, we're certainly not. Now, you're talking about In Excess earlier. We're going to play a track of theirs that you've done.
Yes.
Which one is it?
Well, this song was absolutely one of the songs that when I was, discovered Boys in the sand dunes of Portland Style back in 1987, and this album came out, and this man with his straggly hair and his tight leather jeans, stop me. This is...
No, we won't.
Yeah. Never tear us apart. You can't go past this song.
Joy 94.9.
Beautiful, Ali. That's a great version of it.
And the beautiful Eugene Ball on trumpet there. I love that version.
Stunning. Absolutely stunning. We've got a love you and leave you because we've run out of time. So thank you so much for coming in today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah.
There could have been so much more we could have talked about.
I could talk all day about myself. There's going to be Comedy Festival, and also I'm doing a kids version of the variety show called Ali McGregor's Cab Hooray in the Spiegel tent as well from the 28th of March to the 5th of April.
Right.
So, and that's good. I'm booking guests that would also be on the variety night because I'm being a parent. I'd really want to go see shows that the parents, because 2/3 of your audience are parents, and you know, it's a Sunday and they are tired and probably hungover, and you want to entertain them properly. So that's what I'm doing.
Fantastic. Thank you again, and congratulations on a spectacular career.
Thank you.
Brendan, it's time for us to say goodbye.
Well, very soon. Yes.
Yes.
Mm. But, we'll go into some messages and say a little goodbye when we come back.
You're on Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan, and it's just about time for us to say goodbye for another week.
Unfortunately, but you've still got some film stuff you want to talk about.
Yes, I want to squeeze this in. So we did mention MQFF a little bit earlier. I've got a few that are really stand out to me. I've been waiting to see this one for a while. The Way He Looks, a young sort of adolescent drama, and it's Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
Which is lovely with subtitles, obviously.
Right.
From director Daniel Ribeiro. From Brazil.
Mm.
This one, it's won a few awards around the festival circuits. So it's taken a little while to sort of get around the globe. So I'm very, very happy that we have it here. And hopefully there'll be a full release at some point as well in Australia if you don't get to go to MQFF. But try to. I think it's great to sort of try and support.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, these films, because it takes so much effort to get them to Australia to begin with.
Yep.
You know, do your best. Another one that sort of stood out was one called 10-Year Plan. Now, this one's a little bit cheeky. Best Friend. They sort of say that they're going to get together after 10 years if they haven't found, you know, their soulmate.
Oh, have you done that? I did it with a friend.
I've done it with girls.
Yeah, I've done it with girls, and she got married. Thank God she got married. Otherwise, I would have been in trouble.
Oh, that's hilarious. I think I've given up on that for now. Now, this one... it's called Appropriate Behaviour, and this is actually part of MIF as well that I got to see last year. And the director's name is Desiree Akavan. I think I said that right. She's fabulous. She actually came out and did some talks, or did a talk when she was here.
Yep.
Insanely talented, very funny, very witty, bisexual director, writer, extraordinaire, you know, right across the film spectrum. And she's just a guest starred on Girls, the current season of Girls as well. I love her. Like, I fell in love with her from this film, and seeing her in public performances as well, I'm just in love. So if you can go and see Appropriate Behaviour, fantastic. And it kind of sort of peels back through the layers about bisexuality and you know, gets people talking about it. So I think that's incredibly important in our community to talk about that. Now, a couple of mentions before we go. Jamie Marks Is Dead. Not a very happy title, but this is one of the sort of horror thrillers that is part of the festival. You know I do, David. and I think it's great that Lisa has sort of put a little bit of spotlight on, thrillers and horror.
Yep.
And also the lesbian film Lyle. Very, very excited to see this one. It looks fantastic. And our own Sonia Hammer is going to be doing a talk after the Wednesday session. So this Wednesday, the 25th. It's called Sapphic Suckers.
Sapphic?
Sapphic Suckers.
Right.
So all about lesbian horror.
Right.
So definitely up my alley. and so, yeah, check it out. I think it's going to be fabulous. So basically you get the talk at the end of the screening.
Right.
I'm very excited about it.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. And the more horror, the better. And, you know, gay, lesbian, any kind of GLBTI horror, I'm all about it, because there's not enough of it. There's really not. So, yeah, get on it.
Yep. All right. So when does the festival start?
March 19 starts.
Which is this week, isn't it?
Yes, it is this week. It is in 4 days' time, so Thursday.
Right. Okay. Are you going to opening night?
Not that I know of.
All right.
But we'll see. Okay. I'll try and get a ticket.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening today. It's been a great show. Ali was just wonderful.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.